This podcast was recorded Thursday, February 7th at 11:20 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like maybe Congress will pass a law that says members can only stand, let's say, 10 times during the State of the Union address.
I'm just going to start clapping randomly through our podcast. Let's talk politics.
Oh my God, it just got crazy.
From WOSU Public Media, this is Snollygoster, Ohio's weekly political podcast. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up later in the podcast, why activists think Ohio elections officials should stay in their lane. But first,
Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown.
Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown made a stop in Iowa today.
Here in Dubuque, Iowa today.
Sherrod Brown was met with a cold reception last week in Iowa, at least with the weather across the state. Temperatures dipped below zero, but that did not stop the Democratic senator from testing the waters or ice on the frozen ponds.
Yes, Brown is thinking about running for president, but still hasn't made it official. He is on his Dignity of Work tour.
And when I say work, I mean it can be working on a farm, it can be swiping a badge or punching a clock, it can be raising kids, it can be working on salary and, you know, driving in your car selling products. I mean, it's all of that.
Yeah, we've heard it all before, Sherrod.
Added a few things there. Selling products out of your car, that's new.
Sherrod likes to give a shout-out to everybody when he does his little stump speech. We've heard it all before, but others have not, and that's why he went to Iowa, then to New Hampshire, then Nevada, and South Carolina. Why those states?
Because they are early primary or caucus states. And on this, his first trip to Iowa, because we're guessing there will be a second, Brown focused his populist message on smaller cities and farm country.
Well, it's clear Republicans have taken for granted rural voters. I mean, the White House looks like a retreat for Wall Street executives who care nothing about rural Iowa or small town Iowa or even bigger city Iowa or Ohio.
Here for more on the first stump of that Dignity of Work tour is Clay Masters. He's the lead political reporter for Iowa Public Radio. Hey, Clay.
Hello.
So you've seen a lot of presidential candidates come through Iowa over the years. What did you think of Sherrod Brown?
Well, Sherrod Brown is just joining this rash of people who are coming to Iowa, testing the waters at various stages of whether or not they've announced or they're toying with announcing. And he was a different candidate from what I've seen. You know, Kamala Harris, the senator from California, was here for a big, flashy town hall broadcast on CNN with a large viewership. We've had Kirsten Gillibrand, the senator from New York, has been here. Cory Booker from New Jersey is here right now. And Sherrod Brown was opting for these kind of more typical caucus campaign events where it was a smaller group. He was, you know, able to talk about the price of land these days and ask questions to other Midwesterners. He fit right in, and he was largely there to listen. Of course, he did talk quite a bit when people would bring up different issues that were important to them. But he very much gave a very Midwestern performance, which I'm sure you guys understand what I'm saying there.
Yeah, I mean, he calls this his listening tour. So that was my question: how much listening and how much talking was there?
Yeah, I saw him just at one event, and this is a small town of Perry, Iowa. It's in central Iowa. It's close to Des Moines, but it still takes you about 45 minutes to get out there. And he was listening. I mean, he heard from people around the table. I think three of them were related that were around the table, which is a very, like, rural Iowa thing to have happen. But, you know, talking about concerns about rural hospitals losing services and healthcare and trying to attract more people to small towns, talking about the economy, concerns about the trade tariffs. I mean, there were a lot of national issues that were coming up in that small town. And I should note, too, that he was appearing in counties that went for President Trump in the 2016 general election here in Iowa. And Iowa, like Ohio, went to President Trump in the 2016 election. And he was, you know, very clearly making a case for, you know, I can make my message resonate in small towns, in counties that went for the president.
That's been his brand all along, that he is the Democrat best positioned to poach the quote-unquote Trump voter. You talk about how trying to appeal to healthcare workers. What was the crowd there like? Was it, I mean, these type of events tend to attract the politicos, if you will. What kind of crowds did he have?
Yeah, and the event that I was attending, it calling it a crowd is a bit generous. I mean, there were more press in the room than there were people around the table by far. But, you know, at this stage in the game, a lot of people, especially this go-round, are really eager to hear from any presidential candidate on the Democratic side that is going to run up against Donald Trump. Everybody that I talk to, every voter that I've talked to at a lot of these events from different campaigns, different candidates, they're all focused on one thing, and that is finding somebody that can beat Donald Trump in 2020. And so the crowd was responsive because they're interested and they want to hear from as many of these candidates as they can. And it's early enough in the game here. I mean, it's February 3rd, 2020, when the Iowa caucuses are scheduled to happen. So there's plenty of time for people to hear from different candidates and make up their minds. So it's not like there's, you know, a thriving brown crowd or whatever kind of label you want to give them that is swarming these events at this point. That stuff doesn't come till later. I mean, I should say, like, maybe Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren was the first big candidate to come here, and she was drawing some big crowds.
Yeah, she has the name ID, and Sherrod Brown still has to build that. You mentioned trade as one of the topics that came up, and that's one of the topics that would put him perhaps outside of popular sentiments in Iowa. And he supports tariffs. He generally supports Donald Trump's moves here, thinks that maybe they shouldn't last forever. But, of course, that affects farmers. And what's the take there on Sherrod Brown's trade policies?
Well, they talked about it. But, I mean, at this stage in the game, I mean, it's still a lot of vagueness in what candidates are saying about it. That, I mean, we'll continue to see how this shakes out. And if the trade tariffs, you know, drag on and there are concerns about any kind of a deal not being reached with China on trade, which is a big market for farmers here in Iowa, then I think that those messages will really get sharpened. At this point, you know, they talk in generalities on trade and people seem to nod along with them.
Yeah, Brown even backtracked a bit. There was a slight backtrack, but he basically said that I support the tariffs for now. Where before he didn't quite have that same disclaimer, at least not as strong a disclaimer.
Clay, what type of Democrats do these events tend to attract? You know, a lot of people, when they think of Iowa, they might not think of far left Democrats, but these are very politically active people. What's the key to quote unquote winning over Democrats in the Iowa caucuses?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are some pretty far-left people in the state. There's a lot of activists, and they're really engaged this early in the process. I mean, I go back to 2016 and think about covering Senator Bernie Sanders. Some of his initial events were really small crowds. And then by the time we were a couple weeks out from the Iowa caucuses, I remember he was at the Iowa State Fair at one of their buildings, and it was just packed. And Hillary Clinton won the Iowa caucuses, but it was just a squeaker. I mean, she barely won the Iowa caucuses over Senator Sanders, and her crowd stayed pretty much the same during that entire cycle. And so a lot of these people that are showing up and caucusing, I mean, I think you're going to see a real hunger for people to come out and caucus in 2020. And so it's going to attract a lot of people that, I mean, I've talked to people that did not caucus in 2016, that were not registered Democrats, that are going to register because they're eager to get out and try to find somebody to run against the president. So, yeah, there's all kinds of people and activists that show up to these events and want to try to ask a question to who could be their next president.
Does a Midwesterner have an advantage in Iowa?
I think they do. I mean, you look at how former Senator and former President Barack Obama did in Iowa, being from Illinois, just across the Mississippi, you know, he did really well here. And that could be an advantage because, you know, just knowing how to present themselves. I mean, he had a lot of charisma as well and a very different style than Senator Brown does. But, you know, like I said, Independent Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont ran a really good caucus campaign here and turned out a lot of people, and he's not from around these parts.
Yeah. Now, Bernie Sanders doesn't comb his hair. Sherrod Brown occasionally combs his hair. How's that go over?
It goes over, literally.
Exactly. Somebody beat me to the dad joke there.
Clay Masters from Iowa Public Radio helping us recap Sherrod Brown's, quote, dignity of work tour that hit Iowa before heading off to other early primary states, including Nevada, South Carolina, and New Hampshire. Clay, great to have you on Snollygoster.
Yeah, great to talk with the state that probably often gets called Iowa as much as we get called Ohio.
Yep, Ohioa. That's us.
There you go.
We We've heard some lawmakers here in Ohio recently say that it's too easy to put issues on the statewide ballot. But a lot of activists actually think there are unnecessary barriers, especially one state law.
Yeah, several environmental groups are suing the Ohio Secretary of State's office and local boards of election. They claim county and state officials use unconstitutional tactics to keep certain initiatives from going before voters.
More specifically, activists want a federal court to throw out a 2017 law known as House Bill 463. It lets local boards of elections and the Ohio Secretary of State's office throw out local initiative petitions if either office determines that the petition is in conflict with state law or the Ohio Constitution.
Yeah, the legal action follows a series of rejections of local fracking bans, which violate the state law that says only the state can regulate drilling in Ohio. Even if the proposals violate state law, activists think election officials should essentially mind their own business and stay in their lane.
And local and state officials will not talk about pending litigation. But this really does bring up an interesting argument. Should election officials be in the business of essentially vetting issues before they get to the ballot? Is it their place to determine if something violates state or local law, or should they only worry about if it violates election law?
Well, I mean, it is state law right now. State law says the election officials have that power. So here's their position. They don't want to put something on the ballot that is clearly illegal. Let's use that as an example. The city of Dublin, Columbus suburb where I live, wants to legalize recreational marijuana within the city limits.
Mm-hmm.
That would violate the state law. So local election officials and the Secretary of State's office would say, no, that can't go on the ballot because even if voters passed it, it's illegal because it violates state law, which trumps what the city of Dublin can do. So that's what they're saying. Now, the activists say that's unconstitutional.
Activists are saying their First Amendment rights are more important than a state law that bans local laws of any certain kind. They're saying that their rights are being infringed upon by House Bill 463.
Yeah, because they want to have a say, in their case, whether fracking happens in their community, which is certainly a legitimate concern. But state law is clear. Whether you agree with it or not, the state regulates fracking. They could frack in Dublin if they wanted to. They won't, but they could if there was natural gas under there.
I don't know. In Newark, a couple years ago, there were some activists who were successful in passing a local decriminalization effort of marijuana, actually. Now that we bring this up, I'm just now remembering. And so what the local prosecutor did, said he was no longer going to use local law. He was going to use state law to cite people.
So
I mean, it's not the same. It's not apples to apples. But it's an interesting argument. Do their First Amendment rights supersede a state law?
Well, here's what happens. Say the local boards of elections allow a local fracking ban to go into place. And the Secretary of State allows it to go on the ballot. Local residents approve it. There's a local fracking ban. It's immediately challenged in court. In all likelihood, state courts are going to say, sorry, Ohio state law says fracking is controlled by
election
the state.
Officials would say they're trying to save legal costs more upstream by saying something can't go on the ballot if it's clearly in violation of state law. And that's a sensible argument, at least fiscally and, you know, legally as well. But, I mean, activists are saying morally that they should have a right to put stuff before voters.
There's a simple solution. Fracking activists should change the Ohio Constitution. Put a constitutional amendment on the ballot, just like casino operators did many, many times before they finally got it approved.
This is normally the part of the show where we would name our Snollygoster of the Week. A Snollygoster, in case you don't know, is a self-serving or ruthless or shrewd politician. We're going to shift course this week, and it's going to be the opposite. We were struggling with what exactly to call it. I guess maybe the tepid political party of the week.
The anti-Snollygoster week. So we looked up went to our thesaurus, and we looked up antonyms for Snollygoster, and we found two that fit: boring and inept. So our nominee this week is the Franklin County in Central Ohio, the Franklin County Republican Party. They're not putting one candidate up for a city election, for city council, or challenging the Democratic mayor. Not one.
They're all running unopposed.
So what that means is the election will be boring, and you could say the party is inept.
I think you would definitely say the party is inept. They're not putting a single candidate forward against a mayor who I wouldn't call him controversial necessarily, but he's not wildly popular either. I mean, you would think he could be vulnerable if they put the right candidate forward.
Republicans argue that the system in Franklin County and the city of Columbus in particular is rigged because developers give money to the Democrats in office and that the cycle continues. And until that changes, it's not worth it for them to run candidates.
Well, congratulations to the Franklin County Republican Party. You are the anti-snollygoster of the week. That might often be a good thing, but not this week. We do welcome your emails as well. You can send them to snollygoster@wosu.org. We did get one last week from the snollygoster of the week, State Representative Niraj Antani. He was a good sport. We poked fun at him last week for starting his new campaign days after taking office. He's already running for state senate after just being sworn in for his new term as state representative. And
yeah, so, he wrote that he loved the show, and so we like good sports.
We do, and he said he's willing to come on the show, yeah. So we will certainly have him. Until next time, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster on WOSU Public Media.